there is a fitting theme for the leadership of China this morning, you might say. Not because China has become the largest market by far for Marlboro cigarettes. No, that is the theme from the famous Western movie The Magnificent Seven. And the Lee Marvin riding at the head of the pack of China's new leadership is Xi Jinping, brand new president, riding at the front of a Politburo of six others, Magnificent Seven hence, who will lead China collectively for at least the next 5 years. Here's Xi talking about the Chinese Communist Party in his first speech this week.
It has rallied and led the people in stepping into the breach and making tenacious efforts to turn the poor and backward old China into a new China, ever closer to the goal of national prosperity and strength. The great renewal of the Chinese nation has thus embraced a bright prospect never seen before.
Speaking through a translator, that's China's new president, Xi Jinping. Joining us for more on China's new Magnificent Seven is Elizabeth Economy, senior fellow and director for Asia Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Liz, welcome back to the show.
Thanks very much, John.
Interesting times in Beijing. What do you make of this seven-member Politburo and Xi Jinping himself?
Well, I think they would be very pleased by your calling them the Magnificent Seven. I don't think many people inside China or outside China are referring to them that way. I think in many respects this was a fairly disappointing group that emerged out of what had been quite intense political jockeying leading up to the Party Congress, because they really ended up selecting a group that is, moderate reformers, and down to the quite conservative. And the sort of bold-faced reformers that were in contention, like Yuan Chao and Wang Yang, in the end didn't make it into this group of leaders. And so I think, among the Chinese, certainly, and those who are interested in pushing forward with further economic and political reform, there's a lot of disappointment right now.
And I would say that, this is a little bit of the kick the can down the road sort of situation, which the U.S. is facing, perhaps with action on the fiscal cliff, also a difficult leadership issue. In the case of China, there are members of this Politburo who will have to retire fairly soon. So we're going to see another transition really within the next 5 years. Yes.
Right. In 5 years, the oldest will be forced to retire. And the good news is, well, it's mixed news. At least one of the most conservative, Zhang Dezhang, will be forced to retire. But unfortunately, so will Wang Qishan. And Wang Qishan is probably the most knowledgeable and strongest proponent of pushing forward on economic reform within the Standing Committee of the Politburo. But frankly, even his role in that respect has already been diminished because he's been put in charge of the anti-corruption drive, another disappointment for people interested in economic reform.
So if this is a step backward, has the Chinese government made the decision to wait out the U.S. and its fiscal cliff problems and perhaps come in and deal with the rubble if nothing happens in the United States? Or is this purely a domestic, frustrating sort of sense of a deep freeze within the Chinese institutions themselves?
Now, this is really, I think, 100% sort of a Chinese domestic process. It has almost nothing, I would say nothing, to do with what's transpiring in the United States. I think they made the decision that the party elders who are really the ones, the retired party elders who are really the ones that are responsible for selecting the next generation of leaders, I think made the decision that they were more interested in preserving their own legacy than they were in pushing ahead with reform. It's a kind of fearful approach to the future of China, I would say.
Let's take that fear apart for a moment. Are you saying that the Chinese leadership right now and the Communist Party itself, by far the biggest institution in China, is really afraid of the growing aspirations of the Chinese middle class?
I think there's little doubt that they're extremely concerned. I think, look, this is a country that's facing, in 2010 there were 180,000 protests. There is enormous social discontent within China. Over 500 million people are on the internet in China, and the internet is becoming a virtual political system at this point, bringing a kind of transparency, rule of law, official accountability that the official system doesn't present for the Chinese people. And so, you have 100 million people watching the Taiwanese election and saying, hey, why can't we have elections too? So the whole system, and there's just enormous bottom-up pressure coming at the Chinese Communist Party, and I think they have very little idea about how to deal with it.
Liz Economy, give us a sense of, we certainly see those sort of North Korean-like looking ceremonial pictures on state television in China of this transition, but behind the scenes online, there's all kinds of sniping and cynicism. What have you observed?
Well, right. I mean, this is, you know, very formal, very traditional. You know, at the very end of the party congress, the seven new leaders, you know, march out. You know, basically, we don't know who they're going to be until the very last minute, though a lot of rumors were swirling around. We're sort of, down to the point where we're determining how many little white flower bouquets are sitting out, because that's going to tell us how many leaders there are actually going to be, seven or nine. So there's a lot of formality, a lot of pomp and circumstance, you know, very formal speeches. Everybody votes the same way at the end. But, you know, again, on the Chinese and the internet, on Sina Weibo, there is a lot of sniping. There is a lot of mocking of this kind of tradition. There were some humorous, well, not really humorous, but some editorials in the Chinese newspapers after the U.S. election, you know, talking about how long people had to wait, in some states to vote, 7 hours, 9 hours, and, you know, what this said about this decrepit American system. And on the Chinese internet, people were saying, yes, how long do the Chinese have to wait? 5,000 years to vote. So I think, the Chinese people are frustrated.
Gives you a flavor there.
You know, looking for ways to express their views.
Elizabeth Economy, Senior Fellow and Director for Asia Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.